home, everybody.
Hello.
You better get ready, take your shoes off, put your feet up on the couch, because we have a fun episode for you. It is Monday, April 22nd, and as you might have heard last week, our good friend Felix, good old Felix Sicard, is on a bit of a sabbatical. He's on a sabbatical for, I think we're going middle of May. So for this week, filling in for Felix Sicard, and I think that this may just be this week. There may not be another episode until then, but filling in this week is good friend of the show, Mike DeFlorio, a.k.a. Heyo D-Flo. How's it going, Mike?
Good evening, podcast people. By the way, are we sure Felix is our friend or is he just a colleague?
I consider Felix a friend. I've been doing this long enough with him where I have spent, God, I don't even want to think about how many hours I've spent talking to Felix. Like, yeah. I don't know if I've spoken over the phone potentially to anyone more than him outside of maybe like my immediate family.
He's in the tier two for sure in terms of frequency of interactions.
Yeah.
Okay, 100%. We can refer to him as a friend.
That's 100%. Fine. But now that we were in our house, what are you having to drink tonight? What are you doing at home?
So it's NA beer season, as we know, heading into the spring and summer. So I'm enjoying a Athletic Brewing Company Free Wave Hazy IPA, non-alcoholic beer. And actually, it was you that first recommended that to me last summer. So I have that all just cracked open and ready to go.
Fantastic. They're actually really, really delicious. If anyone out there is looking just for, I don't know, maybe you want to cut out a little bit of alcohol, maybe you want to cut down on calories. For whatever reason, maybe you just want to enjoy a beer and not have any of the alcohol as part of it. They're delicious. Not a sponsor of the show. Athletic Brewing, if you're listening to this, gladly would welcome you as a sponsor. So there's that. Throwing that out there. Throwing that out into the ether. But yeah. All right. Just for everyone out there setting the stage for this episode, as we're about to get into it, this is going to – I mean, we're an off-season edition. We're loosey-goosey. I'm joined by Mike. Felix isn't here to rein us in. But I think what we're going to do on this episode is we're going to dive into a little bit of last week. We had Cutter Gauthier's debut, and then also we had a little bit of an article dropped today by Eric Stevens. And so those are kind of, I think, the only two big newsworthy things. There was also closing day today. I saw a couple of tweets from good friend Pat. I haven't dove into Derek's Twitter yet to see everything, but Pat had tagged me in one of them. So let's just start, though, with kind of the beginning of this all. The last game in Vegas. What do you think of that game overall, Mike? And also, kind of, what do you think of Cutter's debut?
I thought it was really cool, first of all, that the timing of it worked out where he actually got to debut this season. So mm-hmm. I think it was sort of – I was joking around in Discord the day of the game, but honestly, since the rash of injuries affected the Ducks, so we're talking, you know, most of the mm-hmm. season, I think that was the most excited I was for a Ducks game pretty much all year, right? Aside from the beginning of the year when we started out pretty hot, it was great to get to see him not only play, but be elevated into a top, you know, line role with Killorn and Carlson as well. So it was nice that Cronin didn't give him like the Aikens kid gloves.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Threw him into the fire.
Yeah, no, that's a great point, because I think that was something we always saw. I think back to Trevor Zegras's debut. I think he was playing with Derek Grant. If I'm remembering correctly, I think he was on the third line wing in that game. And I think we'll have plenty of time in the offseason, I think, to do an autopsy on Greg Cronin. And we've done it plenty of times throughout this season. I think, Mike, you're kind of on the same board as us, that kind of neutral, some negatives, some positives. But I think one of the big positives for him is that I think we saw it early on in the season with Zegras, even of having him out there in late game situations. Even up a goal, and we saw it kind of with Cutter Gauthier, putting him right there, playing him a bunch and letting him kind of go out there. But yeah, I think Gauthier looks really good. I think that him and Carlson looked like they had a really good chemistry with one another. It looked like they read off of one another. And I think that, I don't know, I hadn't really thought about them two as being a duo, but I think if those two can really become that, and I mean, hell, they're 1 year apart, right? One draft apart. And so if they can become your 1-2 punch going forward, where, or not even 1-2 punch, but they can be your dynamic duo. They can be the Getzlaf and Perry. They can, not obviously in the same set or same playing way or things like that. But They can be your Korea and Solani, where you find a third person to go with them. That could be your top line for the next, 10 years?
Absolutely. I think the one interesting thing I wanted to ask you, Jake, about that
is
it seems unlikely that Killorn is going to be the top line winger with those two next season. So do you think it's automatically Terry? And if so, why do you think Cronin didn't go that route in the final game?
I don't think it's necessarily set that it won't be Killorn. Like,
okay, you think it could be?
I mean, ever since Alex Killorn came back, like, I'd be curious to look at minutes, but I would imagine that his most played with player would be Leo Carlsson. Like, I can't really recall, maybe just games that Leo Carlsson wasn't playing, but I think Alex Killorn, anytime Leo Carlsson and Alex Killorn were in the lineup together, I think they played together. I would need to do a check on that, and that would take a while to kind of run through all of that. But it seems like that's something Greg Cronin really found it good as a duo. It makes sense. You want to have a veteran there to really give them that. And I think Killorn looked good also in the game against Vegas. I think he played a nice support role for those two and worked off of those two well. I think Gauthier really got in on the forecheck well in that game. He was able to set up a goal from Jackson Lacombe with a nice little no-look pass to him. And he also got a bunch of shots off. Like, I think he had the first shot on goal in the game, had a decent couple looks, and he looks NHL ready. Like, I think there's no doubt about it that him and Carlsson together, him on his own, like, he looks NHL ready. And so I think, kind of getting to your question about Terry, I think Gauthier being with Carlsson kind of opens up a lot of things. And I think it allows you to keep Zegras at center and have Troy Terry play with him, because I think while Terry had his really good stretches this season, he also had some poor stretches. And I think that there were times where him and Carlsson didn't necessarily read off of each other too well. And maybe the game that Carlsson plays wasn't necessarily suited to a Troy Terry. And we've seen in the past that Terry and Zegras have worked really well together.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's just this whole conversation is making me reflect on what you and Felix had talked about last week in regards to the trade, kind of doing a retrospective look back, you know, 4 or 5 months later at the trade with Drysdale and Gauthier. And honestly, it really does change the complexion of the forward group.
Oh.
So we needed that kind of piece so badly, and we didn't have to wait for another lottery essentially to get it, right? So it seems like kind of a fast speed move by Verbeek to push along the rebuild and get rid of that was fairly expendable in terms of their depth.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of what we had talked about for the last, year or two, right? Of getting a young forward that can really support this group. They've done a really good job of drafting defensemen. They've done a good job of accumulating picks. That's all well and good, but you only have 6 spots. At a certain point, you need to make a move to really address your weakness, which was a scoring winger. And that's what they went out and did. And I think that maybe 5 years down the line, that may look like the Verbeek poster stamp and trademark trade, I guess would be that. Yeah. But yeah, getting back to this game though, I think this was one of the more fun games this season. I think just the fact of, I feel like in a game like this, I don't look at the numbers too much because there's nothing to predict anymore. There's nothing to look at the numbers to say sustainable, not sustainable. I think you can kind of just kind of not think about that and just enjoy the game of hockey, enjoy what was going on there. And I think overall seeing Vetrano score, seeing kind of how that whole game went with it being Gauthier's debut, I think Zegras looked really good. I just think it was an overall really fun way to end the season.
100%. And having Dostal in that too, right?
Yes. It was
just a lot of, a lot of future vision as to what we could be looking at next year if everybody does stay healthy, and that's the big F. So, yep.
And I guess I'll give you one quick thing here, because who knows next time you'll be on the podcast. What are your overall thoughts on this season?
This season. So I think we've talked about, in terms of grades, like just quickly, I think Cronin, like you alluded to earlier, I would say was sort of a neutral asset this year, which is a massive improvement over what we had last year with Aikens. And so I think we have to be clear again about how historically bad, especially defensively, the team was last year. And you could see, even with the rash of injuries that affected the young core and even older players like Killorn, The team made big strides in terms of being better structured and just having better underlying numbers overall, even though they were still, you know, in the bottom third of the league, right? So I think from a coaching perspective, yep. My biggest critiques from Cronin would be, we talked about this, maybe some of the inconsistencies in disciplining with Zegras, right? We've gone through that ad nauseum. So a little bit questionable there. But I think overall, you have to temper any sort of main conclusions with Cronin because it's year one, he's implementing a new system, and he really did have a lot of key injuries to try to navigate. And so I think one thing that I've said in general about the season throughout it on Discord is that last year was more so depressing, right? Like yeah. The games were just non-competitive, and we were watching a historically bad team, not just in Ducks history, but really in the last 15 to 20 years of the NHL. It was that level of ineptitude. Yep. So this season, there were clear improvements, and we started out on a pretty hot streak, right? Like winning, 9 or 10 of the first 15. So this season wasn't depressing, but I do think the combination of the injuries and the penalties sometimes actually made it more frustrating because the team was showing those signs of progress. And then, you know, it would be more of a letdown, I guess, when a key injury happened or the recurring penalties happen. So I think overall it's year six in the rebuild now, right? 6 years in a row mm-hmm. of playoffs. I mean, the rebuild kind of started later than that because of the complaints we've had about Bob Murray, which we don't have to go back into. But it's a long ways into the process. It's hard for the fan base. I do think that there's a lot of reason for promise, though. And the Ochia trade being towards the top of that list of really cool things that happened during the year. Also, this season flew by. Did you feel that?
Yeah, I definitely did. This season did not feel like last year. I think last year we almost hit January and just was like, oh, how are we going to get through the next couple of months? Especially, I think, from the podcast perspective, right, where I think Felix and I, when you're dealing with a season like that, there's only so many ways that you can talk about the team being bad. And it becomes much more think about the draft, think about the trade deadline, think about all that stuff. And it feels like this year, because there were just so many different intriguing things, the fact that Leo Carlson came back, or Leo Carlson was on the team doing what he was doing, I just think there were more talking points. I think maybe there was one period there mid-February where it kind of felt like that. But then the deadline happens. Then after the deadline, you get Zegras back. But I would agree kind of exactly with what you said. I think it's always going to be more frustrating when you see that the team is better than how the results are playing out. And I think that's what makes it frustrating, because I think you look at this season, and although they only finished with 1 point more than they did last season, I think you can unequivocally say this was a better team that played better throughout the entire course of an 82-game season. They were just snake-picked by injuries. This is not necessarily snake pick, but they just had really poor penalty discipline.
Yeah.
But they were also a better team overall from a goal differential perspective, from an expected goal differential perspective, from all those different things. And the main if you look at just standings points and things like that, and wins, losses, overtime losses, things like that, the only reason why it's close between last year and this year is that last year the Ducks went to overtime a bunch. Right. And they lost in overtime a bunch. And so this year they didn't go to overtime as much, and they won a lot more games. Like, they won a significantly amount of more games this season than last year. But to your point on injuries, one thing I wanted to mention, I was just curious, so I looked at it right now. I think prior to Zegras coming back, they had 3 games total with essentially a fully healthy, like top 6, top 7 forward group. They had 5 games since Zegras returned, because McTavish got hurt and only played 5 minutes against the Flames. And so that just goes to show they had 8 games with a fully healthy, like, top 6.
Yeah.
Like, that just goes to show kind of what the injuries did to this team this season.
It was rough. I think Patrick, shout out to Patrick. I think he was tweeting about this a few days ago, just about, you know, putting that into context with the rest of the league. And I think the combination of, like, man games missed, plus considering who the men were that got injured on the Ducks, it wasn't a bias from us watching them all the time. It really was a significant problem throughout the year. So
yep.
The one thing I'll say also, Jake, and I'm curious to get your perspective on this.
Go for it. We're just vibing here.
Exactly. Biggest thing for me one of the biggest things going into next season, mm-hmm. and it relates to kind of a headline, I think, of this season too, was the special teams play being as poor as it was. And I think from my perspective, that's one of the top things that I'm going to monitor in terms of, does Verbeek feel a need to address that in some way, whether it's a coaching change or, you know, is it something that he calls out as,
I mean,
something he could, felt should have been better?
Yeah, I think you have to. I think, like, you watch the playoffs right now, right? And you look at these top power plays in the league and you just watch how they move the puck, how they move around and what they do and just how distinctly different it is from what the Ducks are doing and how you look at the talent on this team. This is not an under-talented team. There is talent on this team. There's talent that you can put together at least one high caliber unit. And the fact that they are not able to get that same movement, that same situation, that same setup, all that different type of stuff, that leads me to kind of believe that it is a coaching thing more so than anything else. And especially from the perspective, look at these high-powered power plays. Most of them have one unit that stays out there for the majority of it.
Yep.
And you don't have this situation of kind of splitting up time, because I actually think that ends up working against you. Because from the perspective of, if you're out there and you feel like you're actually working around, you're getting chances and then the goalie covers it and then you're just going to change, like, that kind of changes how you approach it. And you almost are looking over your shoulder. You want your top power play unit to feel, oh, I just realized my gain has been really high. So apologies. I'll probably edit that in post. So apologies for people on YouTube. Please let me know on YouTube or Twitch if the levels have been a bit off. Hopefully they have not been. But you want your first power play unit to get the feel, get all that going, and to feel like they are loose out there. And I feel like that can really negate some of that.
Totally agree. Yep.
So, all right. Anything else from this game outside of just kind of the feel-good, fun moments? I guess Dostal almost scored. He went for the empty net again.
That was cool, too. Yeah. No, I mean, it's just brighter days are ahead. And honestly, brighter days, as weird as it sounds, with another lottery season, I think there are a lot of positives to pick up on. And that brighter days are already here compared to where we were. So looking forward to next season.
Yep. All right. Couple more things to hit on before we get to our ad read. And then we're probably going to have a heavy Q&A, and that will probably be it for the show. Keep it fun. Keep it tight. So two other points I wanted to get to is, Patrick and Derek were at X interviews today. Go check out their Twitter feeds. As always, they are must follows for everyone out there. They're doing great work over the Hockey News. Obviously, Derek is also doing some stuff still at the Sporting Tribune. Go check them out. So he had this quote, and I really am happy Patrick asked this. He tagged me in Discord saying he asked it for me, basically. So very, very much thank you for that. He said he asked Troy Terry about potentially playing on the penalty kill. And Terry's response was, I think defensively being in the right spot was a big focus for me. I think I've gotten a lot better and have been working with Greg Cronin. I watch a lot of high-end skill players play penalty kill now, and I would love to. And while, yes, this isn't that upfront of a comment, I just love that kind of little bit from Terry about wanting to do it, because I've been one that has largely thought that should be a guy on the penalty kill. You look at what he's able to do defensively, typically at 5-on-5, and the amount of skill that he has to be able to read plays. I think he's exactly the type of player you want out on the penalty kill, because I think so many people think that you want a big bruiser on the penalty kill, when in reality, that's not great. Sure, they're a bigger body for blocking shots, but you need guys out there that are also quick to recover pucks, get into puck battles, and that win those puck battles also. And that's something Troy Terry is excellent at.
Right. He has the combination of the spatial awareness and then the actual, you know, stick skills, like you're saying, where, and also it seems like he genuinely would enjoy doing it. So yeah, I completely agree. I mean, he's sort of the antithesis of Vetrano, for example, on the penalty kill, where Vetrano really lacks that spatial awareness so often. And I feel like Terry would just, I mean, it would be such an improvement just to sub those two out, for example.
Agreed. And so the other piece of news was, we had an article dropped today by Eric Stevens about Trevor Zegras, and a couple of noteworthy things from that. So the first thing that came out of that that's extremely noteworthy is that The injury that Zegras was dealing with, the lower body injury, at the beginning of the season was, I'm looking for the exact name of it, ostatus pubis, which the Cleveland Clinic states is an inflammation of the joint between the right, left and right pubic bones that can cause groin and abdominal pain. It's exactly what Logan Couture has had a severe case of that has rendered him inactive for all but six games. And it sounds like this is something that Zegras has been dealing with. Basically, he started feeling it right after training camp is what it kind of sounds like from this article. Sounds like not a fun situation. And the broken ankle kind of was a little bit of a blessing in disguise for him because the muscle injury wasn't fully healed around that time. And so it just gave him time to heal. And I mean, first off, what do you think about all of that news?
Yeah, I think blessing in disguise perfectly sums it up. I think it was really interesting how in that article, Zegras said that it was, you know, pretty much the most difficult season he's had.
Yeah.
But more so mentally than physically. So we're going through the physical part, and I'm sure we'll get to the other stuff. But yeah, I mean, that says a lot because physically he went through far more than he's been through in any other season so far.
Yeah, and I also think it's interesting because you look at the numbers, and I think that he had solid enough numbers prior to coming back after the ankle injury, but he really looked really, really good upon returning.
Yes.
Like, I think prior to, like, early in the season, plus also pre-ankle injury, I think offensively he looked good and the points were coming, but it definitely wasn't all there as it was before. But defensively, you saw that the work rate was there. You saw that he was really putting in that effort and doing those extra little steps to be good defensively. It really felt like once he came back, it felt like it clicked more offensively for him than it was in the earlier stretches. And I think that if all was said and done, but if he had played a full 82, and let's just say there was however many games left when he returned, I think he would have ended up with a much more respectable point total at the end of it all. Getting into the other side of it, Zegras also talked about the grind of just kind of social media, with the fact that you have so many different media outlets and fans on social media speculating about him in trade, and just, that's not something we always think about, and sure, we feed into that with throwing out names and rumor mills and things like that, but it definitely, I think, puts things into perspective. And then the other piece of it that came into focus was him mentioning that he hasn't spoken to his GM about the constant speculation around him, and I know that that got a little bit of chatter today. I wasn't fully on Twitter throughout the day. I wasn't fully in our Discord throughout the day, but here's kind of my take on that is, ideally, yes, you would want Pat Verbeek to go out of his way to tell Trevor, tell Zegras here that, hey, here's what's going on. We've gotten calls about you. We're saying no, but I can't guarantee that that's not going to, that there, if there's a deal that comes over, we're going to say no. Like, we're not trading you flat out. Like that's just not the case or something like that. Like, ideally, that's what you want there for that communication. But I also understand that that's just not the normality in the NHL. Like, I think there are so many times where guys' names are going to end up in trade rumors. And if a GM, like, no GM is going to go and talk to every player, go talk to all these guys when their names end up in rumor bills.
Yeah.
Like, especially when it's a situation of he's not shopping him. He said he's not shopping him. And so there's not really anything to say there. And so maybe it's just a situation of saying, hey, want to let you know we're not shopping you.
Yeah.
But still, like, that doesn't mean he's not getting traded. So, like, I also get it from Verbeek's side of, like, I don't want to tell this kid that we're not trading you if, like, we're listening on stuff, but a GM listens on everything. So yeah. I just think people expect more communication between GM and players that I just don't think is necessarily there consistently.
And also, I think you can debate whether or not it's a good thing if that was the case. Like, do you really want your GM being so sensitive to the rumors that are out there such that it's on the complete other end of the spectrum where they're constantly communicating with players mm-hmm. about rumors? I don't really think that that's, you know, that could be fraught with issues too. So
yeah.
I think more so than Verbeek, and you and I kind of spoke about this earlier, but I think if anything, you might expect Cronin to communicate with Zegras about if he thought or perceived it was becoming an issue, more so than the general manager. That would be my take on it.
And I think that's spot on. And I think that we saw that, right? We saw when, like, it felt like Greg Cronin, when they were in Toronto, made it a point to hype up, to pump the tires of Zegras and everything around him. And so I think you're spot on there. And so I don't think there's a whole lot more to say on that. Anything else you want to hit on before we go to a quick break?
Nope. I think that was it.
All right. So this episode is brought to you by Green Chef. So Green Chef is the number one meal kit for clean eating, delivering pre-portioned and prepped quality whole foods with limited processed ingredients. Green Chef sends organic fresh produce, responsibly sourced proteins, and chef-designed recipes in every box for satisfying, nourishing, and convenient meals that make it easy to stick to a clean routine. Find recipes for every lifestyle, including Mediterranean, plant-based, gluten-free, protein-packed, keto, calorie-smart, and gut-healthy. So Green Chef is about clean eating. You can build healthy habits the easy way with nutritious recipes from the number one meal kit for clean eating. They deliver quality whole foods with limited processed ingredients, including low added sugar and sodium smart options that so you can eat with a clean conscience. And each week, you can choose from 80 plus flavor packed options. You can easily customize your meals to suit your lifestyle with preferences like keto, plant-based, Mediterranean, gut and brain health, calorie smart, quick and easy, protein-packed, and gluten-free. And you can take back time in the kitchen with dinners in 30 minutes and lunches in 10. Green Chef delivers everything you need to make convenient, wholesome, and delicious meals directly to your doorstep. Each meal kit includes a pre-measured ingredients, some produce pre-chopped, and custom sauces pre-made in-house. And they also curate market items to support convenient, clean eating all day long. And April is Earth Month, and sustainability is a core to the Green Chef brand. Green Chef offsets 100% of delivery emissions and 100% of plastic in each box. Green Chef partners with Plastic Bank to collect ocean-bound plastic pound for pound every box they deliver. And so Green Chef's great. They've really, really sent us meals. And every single time they send it, it's absolutely fantastic. Some of the best meals. My wife and I have kept the meal recipes after the fact because they send you these nice little cards that have the recipes, have all the ingredients, and you can go out and replicate them if you want. But every single time you get it, you get those cards. So you not only are getting all the ingredients to make it, you're also learning how to make that. So I really, really love that about Green Chef. So go to greenchef.com/CTP50 and use code CTP50 to get 50% off plus 20% off your next 2 months. Once again, you can go to greenchef.com/CTP50 and use code CTP50 to get 50% off plus 20% off your next 2 boxes. Once again, that's Green Chef, the number one meal kit for eating well.
It's so interesting not co-hosting with you and you not reading Manscaped. So this was quite a contrast to the last time I was on the pod.
You know? All right. So anything else you want to briefly chat on? And Duck Shagger not saying, there were probably a lot of Green Chefs on 420.
Bingo. Perfect.
Yeah.
No, I think we're good. Let's open Pandora's box for questions, right?
Oh man, this is going to be a wild one. Give me 1 second here as I'm just double checking, something for myself. All right, let's get into some questions here. So Charbonneau, first off, we're going to start with our Patreon exclusive Discord. Go to patreon.com/craftspawn. We're at the $2 tier. You get access to our Discord. At the other tiers, you get access to other bonus content. So if you want to support us in a way that also gets you bonus content, gets you one of the best communities for Ducks fans out there, go to our Patreon, patreon.com/craftspawn. So Charbonneau asked that if the Leafs are eliminated in the first or second round, Keefe gets fired, do you think the Ducks should fire Cronin and hire Keefe?
Wow. Well, if you ever were going to do it, I think Keefe would be one person that is in the top tier. But no, I think we need to ride the Cronin wave, pun intended, since he loves surfing so much. I think we need to ride the wave out, and it's only been year one. So I want to see, personally, I think we've seen enough from Cronin where that's good, where I want to see it through. So I would not want to do something like that.
It's tough. I guess here's my view of it. Would I do it? Maybe. Mainly because I think Sheldon Keefe's a good coach, and I think there's a whole lot there for him. Will the Ducks do it? No.
Right.
Because they just hired Greg Cronin. There's just really no way that that makes any sense for them to do. The Ducks just aren't a team that I think are in the market of paying multiple coaches, especially right now. I think if maybe they're contending, you would be in a little bit of a different situation. But I also think this is Verbeek's first coaching hire. I think him going out and firing him after one summer, after one season, is rough. So I think they should do that? I think you think about it. Will they do it? No.
Agreed.
All right. Arrest Gritty Drumbanger said, you guys forgot to grade the GM in the last pod. Please give Pat Verbeek a grade for this year. Well, you weren't on that podcast, but the floor is yours, sir, and I'll give you mine after.
So what did we – I said C for Cronin, and I think for Verbeek, I'm probably more on the positive side for Verbeek, I think, than some portions of the fan base. I would say a B+. I think he once again handled the trade deadline with aplomb. He made all of the moves, with the exception of Vetrano, although that was a tougher move to make, that we would expect a seller to make. And then I think the Drysdale-Gauthier trade also has to, you know, it seems to be aging well, and I think you have to put that in the positive column. So I understand some of the negatives might be the contract negotiations during training camp and possibly how that affected, for example, the likelihood of Zegras getting hurt. I mean, there's a couple things you could say, maybe nitpick, but I would say B+ overall for Verbeek. I'm pretty positive on his tenure so far.
I have a hard time giving him anything other than an A. Like, I think, yes, you'd be critical of – I have a hard time being critical of the contract negotiations. While, yes, we were critical at the time, and I think there is validity in there, like, all negotiations are going to be that. They're going to be a negotiation. I think the only thing you can really be critical of is the contract he handed out to Alex Killorn. Like, I think that is the biggest thing you can actually be critical of. But, I mean, he made a blockbuster deal that really, really addressed a massive weakness within the system that could be one that you look back and could be a franchise changing type of trade. And then he did what he needed to do at the deadline. No, he didn't hit anything out of the park. That's why I gave him a B at the deadline. But I think overall, when you assess the season and add in the Gauthier trade, I think it's hard to not give him an A.
I think that's totally fair. One other thing, too, about the contracts, Jake.
Yeah.
You know, those contracts like the Killorn and Strome deals, yes, in an isolated sense, they're not great value. But in the overall ecosystem of the team, he hasn't done anything that's going to really hamstring them. And, So they're, you know, like, for example, with the Killorn deal, it sort of paces with the Silverberg and Henrique deals going away, right? So I think he's mindful of all that. He definitely seems to play chess as a GM and not checkers.
I'm definitely going to be curious to see if he signs a free agent this offseason, if it's an older free agent, if he limits the term. For a couple of different reasons there. I that's something I'm going to keep an eye on a little bit with that.
He has said in the past he hates term like the devil or something like that. He has made it publicly clear that he does not like to give out long term if he can help it. So
yep. Livin'sy Life, Alex, love your handle. I am not reading that whole thing right now. But Livin'sy Life said, are the Canes good and wise? The answer, no. Well, you probably sent this just a bit too early, Alex, because the Hurricanes scored those two goals and won that game.
The Canes are very good.
All right. Righted by Felix French said, can you name a best case, realistic case, worst case for signing a top six free agent winger?
Wow.
So if we're talking about free agents specifically, so we're going to remove any restricted free agent. It has to be unrestricted free agent. Because mainly because anything that is an RFA will require some form of trade or things like that to make that happen. So let's just I'm pulling up cap friendly right now.
Me too.
So look, I would say,
well, I think best case Reinhardt would probably be in that category, even though
best case Reinhardt, but that's also tough just because of what the contract's going to be.
Yeah.
Like,
you could argue that's like the middle of the road because you're getting.
I don't even know if that, like, that's a tough just because I don't know if it's middle of the road. I don't know if, like, I just don't necessarily know. I think that they should do it, but I don't. It's just hard, I guess, right? Because it depends on the contract with that specifically. Let me think about this, though. But yeah, probably best case if we had to do it, probably Reinhardt if it made sense on a contract. Middle of the road. I mean, I also think a Jake Guentzel trade could be interesting. He's not a right-handed shot. He's a left-handed shot. Right. But the issue there is both those guys are going to require seven-year deals, and that term is going to be rough, and this team's going to need contracts for their younger players. It's just going to be really tough.
Here, I'll give two for you, Jake. What about where would you put Stamkos and Marchessault?
So either both those guys on 2 years deals, I say middle of the road.
Okay.
Middle of the road, not ideal because of age, but if you can get them on a 2 year deal, I think that fits nicely with the contract structure of this team.
I agree.
And you can overpay for those 2 years, because this is kind of what I was getting at with the, when you were talking about the contracts, is if you go to the Ducks cap page, if they give out a 2 year deal, that would align with Zegras coming up as an RFA. That would come align with Carlson being an RFA. That would align with Gauthier being an RFA. That would align with Minchikov being an RFA, Zellweger being an RFA. So you have these guys on cheap deals for the next two seasons. So if you can pay a guy, I mean, hell, you could give Stamkos probably 10 mil over two, 10 mil a year for 2 years. The only tough thing there is it restructures your pay structure within the team. But you could overpay someone for 2 years.
For sure. Also, Vetrano is going to go off the books unless they re-sign him after next season.
Correct. So there's that. So I'd probably put those middle of the road if it's 2 years. Worst case, I mean, I think Tyler Bertuzzi would be a worst case.
Yeah, that would be bad.
I think he's fine, but I don't think he's going to be worth what he's going to get paid. I mean, Elias Lindholm's an interesting person there, and he may be a little bit less than we think with the fact that Vancouver's not in there. What other worst case are there?
It's hard to see. There's not like too many duds that pop out on this list here.
Matt Duchene could be interesting, but I think he stays in Dallas.
Yeah. Also, Tarasenko could be interesting too.
But I would stay away from Tarasenko.
I agree.
Just for context, going into next season, the Ducks have a projected cap space of 32.8 mil. And I'm just confirming. I don't know. I'm trying to see if they have updated the upper. Yeah, so the upper limit's set at 875. So they have a projected cap space of 32.8 mil. And that's with 16 roster spots. So they will have to go up to 23. So they have to sign seven players, but they have 32 million to sign seven players. And there's going to be some of those that sign for cheap.
Sure.
Makes sense. Yeah.
I think Stamkos is a Duck.
That's, I think it's like, I think they have a legitimate shot. I think at the end of the day, it depends on what Steven Stamkos wants. If he wants to chase cups, no, he won't go to the Ducks. Like that's just not going to happen. If he wants to go to a place where he can be a mentor, if he wants to live in the sun still, if he wants to play with his friends in Alex Killorn, if Verbeek is willing to pay him a bit more AAV, if he wants to make a little bit more money, like there are benefits to playing in Anaheim, yes. Especially with it being an up and coming team. And yeah, so. All right, Duck Shagernut said, which playoff teams have a coach in the hot seat if they lose in the first two rounds?
Very good question.
Sheldon Keefe.
I was just going to say, Keefe obviously jumps off the page there.
Yeah.
Let's see. We can go through it on both sides. I mean, I can't see I think Patrick Waugh obviously has done enough where he's going to come back. He was sort of handpicked by Lamoriello.
Yeah, I think any new coach is safe with a first or second round exit. Do you think Brind'Amour is not safe?
That's a really interesting one because he's had so many kicks at the can now and they're really stockpiled, you know.
But he's also turned them into a perennial contender.
Sure.
And I think how much of it is just the playoffs are a shit show and really hard. And so it's hard to win in the playoffs, basically. There's so many things that have to go your way. And what do you value? Having a team that is going to be consistently good and give you a chance to win a cup? Or making a change to make a change?
Yeah, I think, and I totally agree. And I think it just depends on ownership. So that's, I don't know their ownership well enough to know, but that's an intriguing one for sure. But I think Keefe is pretty much the clear cut answer.
Yeah, I think Keefe is for sure the answer there. All right. Stan said, this draft seems to be very defense heavy. Do the Ducks draft for need or best position? Part two, how do we see the forward depth playing out for this team?
Well, I think the forward depth was really helped, like we said, with the Gauthier trade, right? So that plugged a hole that was there. They still need to rebuild their bottom six. And so if they do draft a forward with the pick that they have this year, you would assume that they're going to be on the team next year in all likelihood and maybe be in that role. But I still think forward depth is a more pressing need for the organization as a whole.
I mean, I don't think there's necessarily a pressing need either way, I guess, is my view of it. Because they're five deep for forwards right now. Like, just from like a young, like considering Troy Terry young still, which he's on the outskirts of that now. Mm-hmm. But you've got Terry, Gauthier, Carlson, Zegras, McTavish. Like, there's five. If they win first overall, there's Macklin, Celebrini. There's your entire top six is guys you've drafted. Yeah. And so to Stan's point of, do the Ducks draft for need or best position? I think they just do best player available. I think, but it's based on what you think your best player available is. And I think that with this draft being so defense heavy, I don't think that's a bad thing, because I think for this draft, I think the Ducks are either going to get no doubt first overall pick in this draft in a Macklin Celebrini that's of a similar caliber probably to a Leo Carlson. Or you're going to get a potential number one defenseman. And if there's a, if you take Levshinov, there's a right hand shot defenseman. And so as for forward depth, though, to the question of how do you see it playing out? I mean, if they get Celebrini, then there's your top six right there. And then you still have Killorn, Strome, Vetrano next season. Like, you really just have a fourth line. That's all the Ducks need to build for next season outside of if they need to add a top six winger.
Yeah.
So like, this team is kind of set from a forward depth perspective. They have eight of their top nine on this team right now.
Yeah.
So
I agree though, in general, with take the best player available. I don't think they're in a position quite yet where they can pick and choose based on need. I still think they just need the best talent on the roster.
Yeah. Floyd Gondoli said, extend, release, trade. And I'm going to modify it slightly because you can't just straight release players, but let's go extend, waive, trade. McGinn, Ross Johnston, Ben Myers.
Oh, man.
This is easy for me.
Yeah, go ahead. You go for it.
Extend Brock McGinn. I'm a big fan of Brock's game. I don't think he's like this huge outstanding player, but I think he's exactly what you want in a modern day fourth liner. I would waive Ross Johnston because I don't think he has any value in a trade, and trade Ben Myers because he at least gets you something.
That's the main point that I was at with that, was that Ross Johnston has no value, so you'd have to waive him.
Yeah. Salami Sandwich said, after watching the game ones and some of the games two, do you regret any of your bracket? If so, what changes would you make if you could?
Good question.
I don't regret any of my bracket.
I don't either at the moment. No.
By the way, I'm not going to spoil my bracket. I'll probably put it out there at some point. But if you want to hear it, go check out our Patreon episode. But I'm very content with my bracket at this point in time.
Me too.
Olaf and Berserker said, looking back on the season, what do you think each of you think you perfectly predicted for the Ducks? And what do you think was your biggest miss?
Another great question. Predicted. Let's try to go with that one first.
Yeah, that's not easy because there's a lot I didn't predict right. I think I said McTavish would be in the like 60 point range, which I'm going to just give myself a slight pat on the back here, because although he only was at 42 points, he was at 42 points in 64 games, which I think comes out close to 60 points.
Approximately, yeah.
53 points. So I was a little bit off, but that I was probably the closest to.
Yeah, I think that's a good one. I would say probably the one that jumps out in terms of poor predictions would probably be Terry. I think in terms of point production, he was probably below where most of us thought he would be. But again, it's hard to say because none of us could have predicted the incredible amount of injuries that were going to plague the team. And I think they really affected someone like Terry probably more than anybody.
Yeah, and I'm going to go, my biggest miss was probably, I mean, there's a lot of big misses. Maybe just the point projection for this team could overall be a big miss, because I think I said 80 or something like that, high 70s. But I'll probably go with Zegras. I think I said, and like, this is partially due to injury, so that's going to cause it. But I think I said he would be at a point per game. He would be at 80 points this season and 15 points in 31 games. So I'll call that my biggest miss.
That's fair.
Isaac on that point said, who's the next Duck who hits 90 plus points?
Leo.
I'd say Leo. Like, everyone here knows I love both Troy and Trevor as players. I don't know if either of them hits 90 plus points. I think Leo Carlson is the most skilled player on this team, and I think he's going to be the one to hit 90 plus, or maybe it's Celebrini.
Yeah,
Mitch Brown's beloved said, if you've read the Athletic article on Zegras, do you think Verbeek should have done more to help Zegras' mental state throughout the season, or was it fine that he didn't talk to Zegras? So we kind of touched on this. I think it's fine. Like, I don't think a GM is going to go out of his way to talk to his players, especially just based on rumors. I don't think a GM can really go in and know all the rumors that are happening and going around the league.
Yep. I think that's more of Cronin's responsibility. And it seems like he took that upon himself to do.
Yep. Ooh, Appa with a hard hitting question. Was Leo Carlson worth the 22-23 season?
I would say yes. That season, what were you going
to
say?
I was going to say hindsight's a hell of a drug here.
It is. It is.
Because we don't have to go through that again.
I think at some point during that season, though, we all checked out emotionally. And so.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know,
It just, and that's why it felt like it dragged on forever. So I think so. At some point, we chose not to care because of what we were watching. And so, yeah, I think watching Leo this year, especially if you got to see him in person, it's incredible. So I would say yes.
Yeah, I would agree. Doomcrosser said, the Leo plan, complete failure or simply a waste of time?
Oh, so this is referring to the load management part.
Yes.
I'll throw this to you. What do you think of that one?
I think it's tough because I think the injuries kind of made it cloudy where we really don't have a good understanding of it. Because... Right. Basically, he got hurt right when he was supposed to start ramping up. He had the knee injury happen right when he was supposed to start ramping up and playing every game. So we weren't able to see it, but I guess, and so he got rest from the injuries, the two injuries, the knee injury, and then I think the head injury, I think was what it was, upper body injury that he got later in the season. But I'll say this, like, Carlson looked his most dominant in the final 10 games of the season.
Yes.
And the question ends up being, okay, is that just because he was rested due to the injuries? Is that because of the load management? It's hard to really say because of that being a bit muddied, but all we can say is the plan was so that he could be a monster at the end of the season. And I think Carlson played his best hockey at the end of the season. So whether that's correlation equals causation, a bit of an unknown there, but I don't think you can say it was necessarily a complete waste of time if it helped him develop his game and he was playing well at the end of the season.
Totally agree. And you could just see, like, although he was solid throughout most of the year and he showed flashes throughout most of the season, the last 10 games or so of the year, he jumped off the ice. Like, he was just definitely took it to another level. So I would agree. If that was the intention, I think they achieved it.
Yep. And now we're going to move to Twitter. I got this DM from Hockey South. Then Twitch and YouTube, start throwing your questions in the chat with a big Q at the front of your question at the front. We'll get to those next. He said, hey Jake, another season in the books, on to the off season. What are the two must have changes in the systems, coaching, and player uses? What two roster positions are highest priority to address? Have a great show. So what's two must have changes in the systems, coaching, or player usage?
Well, to me, at the top of the list is special teams. So, yep. And, you know, for those that don't remember, the special teams crew or coaching crew that was here last year is still here. And
not on the PK.
Oh, not on the PK, right. Brent Thompson is new, right?
Correct.
But Newell Brown was retained. And I just think we have over multiple head coaches, multiple seasons, multiple personnel groupings, we've just seen the same stagnant results on the power play. And also, yeah, the penalty kill is really surprising how poor it was this year. So I would say whoever's building that system and then also deciding the line combinations, particularly on the PK, I think that would be the two things that I would want to see change the most.
And the other must have change, because we'll do that as number one. Number two, I'll take this one. It's going to be bring in a ref in training camp. Bring in a ref in training camp.
Interesting.
Let him watch your play. Let him break down clips of last season, because the amount of penalties this team took was so excessive. Put them on the back foot. If you clean that up, that saves you so many goals throughout the season, especially when you're having a bad penalty kill also. Like, right. Sure, having a good penalty kill is better than having a bad one. The best penalty kill is not taking penalties.
Yeah. And also, that's a great point. And also, being on the PK for as long as they were also takes away from their development when they're playing at full strength. So it all kind of correlates together as a really, really black hole on the team. So I think that's a great idea.
Yeah. And then he said, what two roster positions are the highest priority to address? I'd probably say, yeah, getting one more top six winger would be good. And then I'd probably say a good fourth line center.
I agree. Also, a right-hand shot defenseman wouldn't hurt either.
I don't think they have space. I don't think they have space.
Yeah, I was just thinking because they never really replaced Drysdale in that sense throughout the season. But
I'm in the sense of adding a specific right-hand shot, no. But they were deploying. Like, the thing is, they have four left-hand shot defensemen. Like, someone does have to get deployed on the right side to play.
And McCone was in that role, for example.
And Zellweger was in that role also. Right. Like, that's going to have to happen to play, and whether Vakanainen's back or what's going to happen there. But, all right. I don't see any questions. Let me throw it in the chats right now, but we'll get to them in a minute. But for those of you listening on your favorite podcast services, you can find us at twitch.tv/CrashThePawn, where you can support us. If you have Amazon Prime, you get one free Twitch Prime gaming sub each and every month, and it does help out more than you can imagine. You can be just like our good friend Dux Dragonaut, who resubbed for 19 months, and it does help out more than you can imagine. Or if you want to support us in a way that's completely free to you, go to youtube.com/CrashThePawn. And yes, I know all of you have YouTube. And you can subscribe to our channel, like us there, give us super chats, anything like that. Helps out more than you all know. Helps us get us a little bit higher. So we had a question from Brandon Pineda, just saw it. Said, if we manage to get the first pick and take Celebrini, is there a large downside to still trading Vetrano and a pick or two for a player on the lines of Natchez?
I would say there's, with the Vetrano part, it's going to depend on where the team is as we get closer to the deadline next year. I think we've talked about this, right?
Well, specifically for a singular player like a Marty Natchez. I think at the end of the day, no, because I think Natchez is an upgrade on Vetrano.
Right.
And so all you're doing there is you add Celebrini. Celebrini now adds to your top six, and now Natchez is now a third liner or second. Like, you now jumble it around and you have a top nine. Like, let's just say that happens, right? You have, let's run through this. Gauthier, Carlson, Killorn. You could have Natchez, McTavish, Strome. And then you could have Terry, Zegras, Celebrini.
Not bad.
Like, I think even if there are people that are really high on Vetrano because the season he's had, and yes, he did score all those goals, it's going to be very tough for him to replicate that type of season. And I think Marty Natchez, both from an age perspective, from all these things, the only downside you would end up with that is the potential contract structuring long-term for this team, because you can only keep all these guys for so long. And honestly, I don't think it's a bad idea, because if you get Celebrini and you get Natchez, like, the Ducks should be in the playoffs next year if those two things happen. Definitely. And so the thing is, you need to now start getting, how do I phrase this softly so that I don't look bad in 3 to 4 months? If that were to happen, you need to realize that your cup contending window is now going to be a lot sooner than you were thinking it was, because you have all these guys on cheap ELCs that will not always be cheap ELCs. So you need to take advantage of that because you've been able to put this team together.
For sure.
And so that is, I guess, not a downside, but a repercussion of that happening. It's not a bad repercussion, but you do have to have that happen.
I think it's just, I totally agree. I think it's just reflective of, you know, the rebuild is kind of over. Like, yeah. it's not over from a results perspective yet, but it's go time for this team starting next year. I mean, they have to be pushing for the playoffs next year, just based on, from a contract perspective, pacing these things out so that they can still afford to sign free agents and be competitive. So.
Yep. Hammock M said, question, which would be more painful to watch? Seeing the Kings or Knights win the Stanley Cup this year?
Kings.
Oh.
We've already seen the Knights.
We've already seen the Kings, though, also.
But they're the Kings.
Yeah.
I vote Kings.
I don't want to see the Knights. I don't want to see the Knights win back-to-back to cups. And they're not good. Like, at least with the Kings, I could, like, as much as I would dislike it, like, with the Kings, I could at least say, okay, they went through this rebuild. They traded assets. They did it in a way that I think is respectable. They play good good 5-on-5 hockey, and those good 5-on-5 numbers has led to a repeatable success that has led them to a cup. With the Golden Knights, it's like, no, it's just bullshittery this season.
Well, you could spin it also and say, though, it would show can't believe I'm defending the Golden Knights, but the fact
that their cutthroat nature and that type of stuff and always going for it. Yeah.
Yeah. Like the Eichel deal. Right.
Yeah.
And also Stone coming back and contributing, you know, if that actually happens. So I don't know. It's a miserable scenario to consider. Let's hope it doesn't happen.
All right. Also Tony, our good friend, Tony Kempafu subbed for 47 months and he's added this comment stating, and this is, I'm quoting him. This is not me stating this. This is a quotation from him. We are all Golden Knights and Leafs. Say it, Jake. Say it. I said it. It was not something I said. It was something he said.
And now we move forward.
And let's make that clear. Let's make that clear.
I think we also have some shit show questions, Jake.
We do. So I was going to get there. All right. God, now it's going to get clipped. All right. So we got shit show questions. Let's see from today. If you have any more questions, throw them in. Oh, last one left said, have they fired any assistant coaches yet? No, they have not. LewisX209 said, question for the Flobert. When should the CTP Discord expect their burgers?
Wow. Amazing that Lou is bringing this to a podcast. This is a slanderous lie that has been percolating through our Discord, that somehow I owe the entire Discord In-N-Out Burgers, and Lou needs to show the receipts or else it's never going to happen.
Okay, there it is. Although I do expect you to get me In-N-Out at some point in the next week for having you on the show.
Well,
that's the tax.
The new location in your hood. We can check it out.
All right. Our good friend GB said, question for Mr. Flo. If you could be a disc jockey at any venue in the world, which would you pick?
Wow. Shout out to Green Bastard for highlighting my side hobby of DJing. Wow. I would say New York City, The Good Room. Look it up.
Okay.
Amazing electronic venue.
Question for Jake. If you could be named after a different reindeer, which would you choose? What are the different names? Rudolph, Song.
You're making us Google this, Green Bastard.
Rudolph, Song... lyrics. Let me on Dasher, on Prancer, on Comet, on Dasher and Dancer and Prancer and Vixen, Comet and Cupid and Donner and Blitzen.
I think I know what I'd pick for you.
What would you tell me?
I would go Comet. I think
Comet?
Yeah. Or Blitzen, I think, is good too. Blitzen has like an edgy, hard hitting feel to it.
Let's go Blitzen. Let's go Blitzen.
Okay. Fair.
Let's go Blitzen with it. All right. D-Rock saying, throwing this in here because it's only semi-hockey related for D-Flow. Who is your favorite Rangers player of all time? And why plus who is your favorite New York Knicks player of all time and why?
Wow. Well, we'll go for the Rangers with Mike Richter, since the Rangers have always been built on elite goaltending. You could also say Lundqvist as well, but I'll go with Richter. And then for the Knicks, oh man, the strings that tie me to the Knicks are much deeper than the ones that tie me to the Rangers, having grown up in New York, and the Knicks were always my number one team. It's got to be Patrick Ewing. John Starks would also get consideration. Really anybody from that like 93 to 2000 core. Charles Oakley is another one, but I'll go with Ewing or Starks.
Our good friend Tony has clipped me saying that.
Oh boy.
I hate you. I hate you, Tony, so much.
It was a setup.
It was a complete setup. All right, Solani Sandwich said, we all know about the Del Taco / Taco Bell controversy. Crunchwrap Supreme or Chicken Soft Tacos? The Taco Bell tacos are just mess, so not considering those. So, I'm going to just throw it out there. I got Taco Bell like a month ago, and it was the first time I had probably had it in 4 or 5 years. And we are a Del Taco household. My wife got really mad when I said I kind of wanted to get Taco Bell, but you know, I was coming home after getting beers with some friends, and I was like, Taco Bell sounds good right now. And she's like, well, I'm not going to have any of it. I'm like, okay. Got myself a Crunchwrap Supreme though, and got myself some of their hot sauce. And I have to say, I was extremely disappointed. First off, Taco Bell's hot sauce is garbage. Like, it tastes citrusy, the hottest one. Like, it's not good, doesn't taste good. And, like, the Crunchwrap Supreme was fine. Like, it's fine. I think Taco Bell's, like, ground beef is probably a bit better than Del Taco's. But a chicken soft taco from Del Taco with their Del Inferno sauce, like, their hot sauces are just so much better. Get a quesadilla from there. Get so many things, and it's just so much better. This is purely if I'm just in a mode for just wanting something that I don't care how many calories it has. I just want something that tastes good. They're crispy chicken tacos. It's basically a chicken tender in a tortilla with some of their white sauce, and throw some hot sauce on it. It's so good.
I think the way I would describe this is that in a environment in Southern California where there is a plethora of amazing, authentic Mexican food options, you cannot get Taco Bell. You can justify some of the menu items on Del Taco being worth it, and also the convenience factor, but you cannot justify
getting Taco Bell. I have a way actually to bring you in on Del Taco even more. So during Lent, they do like their fish, like every place they have fish and shrimp and all that stuff. Guess what they actually did a beer battering, straight up beer battering on their fish and shrimp. And it was with Buena Vesa.
There you go. Stone. Shout out Stone Brewing Company.
Using a local. But yeah, Del Taco's great. I've never actually had their burger, but I've heard it actually is really good.
Their fries are also very good.
Their fries are delicious. God, yeah, I want Del Taco. Man. All right. Arrest Gritty Drumbanger said, question for the flow, which New York City pizza shop is best?
Ooh, very good question. We have discussed this in Discord before. I would say Artichoke is one that's very good. That's a chain throughout the New York City area. So I would go with Artichoke. But one slice is equal to what you would think of as like three slices normally. They're massive.
Is it like the size of a slice from Brooklyn City?
It's even bigger. Yeah. Ooh. But Brooklyn City is, for those that don't know, a wonderful New York style pizza place in me and Jake's neck of the woods in South OC. Fantastic.
Yep. Go check it out. Hardcore Luchador said Del Taco stole the Noggles burger recipe. That's why the fries and burgers are so good. But don't know what Noggles is, but okay.
Me either, but sure.
Yeah. All right. I think that's going to do it for us tonight. Any parting words for people out there?
Well, folks, stay positive. Another year of the rebuild is complete, and it's going to be a really fun summer. We have the draft lottery coming up, all the draft analysis, which Jake and Felix will keep you plugged in with, and then we kind of get to chill over the summer for a bit, and before you know it, we'll be at Irvine for training camp in September.
Yep. All right. So for those of you who want to support us, and just as a heads up, the next planned episode for us is going to be on May 14th, is I believe the current plan. Or let me double check that actually really quickly. Mike, vamp for me for 1 second here.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, no worries. I think the other thing too is we'll probably, if for those of you who are interested in joining the Discord, if you haven't already, we'll probably be doing, hopefully it's the last one we do for a while, but another kind of draft lottery party where we do trivia on Zoom and we just kind of watch the lottery together. We've done it the last 2 years, so look out for that again in May as well.
Okay. Thank you for vamping, because yes, our next episode is going to be on 5/14. So go check us out then. We're going to be taking the next couple of weeks off just to rest, recuperate, all that fun stuff. But if you want to support us, there's a couple different ways that you can do us. If you want to support us monetarily, you can go to patreon.com/crashthepond, where at the $2 tier, you get access to the Discord. At the $7 tier, I believe is what it is. But if you support us at our pay up tier, you get access to 2 bonus episodes a month and videos from Felix. There's also some other ones in there where you can help support us even more if you want to. You can also support us over at twitch.tv/crashthepond. You can support us at youtube.com/crashthepond. You can find myself on Twitter at reindeergames91. You can go to crashthepond.com where you'll find some of Mike's writing. You can find Mike on Twitter at Mike_dflow. Is that right?
That is correct. Did I get that
right? Mike_dflow. So with that being said, I guess we'll prepare for the off season and get ready for some exciting times in Duckland.
Yes, can't wait. Fare thee well.
Bye.